I've always got a couple of initial questions. I don't know, you've probably got your own things you want to make sure you say, but I always think it's interesting to know whether your family were supportive, whether you were brought up in a political environment, that sort of thing. So we have a vast differences around that.
I'm sure. First of all, I got to know about Greenham in the south of France, where I was staying in a Buddhist monastery. And I was helping in the kitchens because I was a spiritual seeker and I had no money to my name, nothing. Kind of cleaning toilets, helping in the kitchen, you know. I was a young woman and looking for my way through. There was a nun there, and I can't remember her name, unfortunately. She was British, she was English, and she was a lesbian, and she was a very interesting woman. She would give some little talks and some meditation to the women folk, because it was a monastery and the women, it was mainly women nuns, you know. And so me and my partner at the time and our little girl were there kind of camping and being catered for, you know, sharing some work to get food and shelter. And she said to us one evening, she said, well, look, I'm a potter of trade. I've got a lovely house in Cornwall. It's always open. You can use it. You just walk into the door. It's always open. But there is this thing called Greenham Common, which is this and that and the other, she explained. And maybe you'd like to go there for an experience and see what happens. And you can always go to my house in Cornwall. So we decided to go because that was, you know, we were following life as the waves were presenting without much plan. There was no planning. It was just doors were opening and we were just following them. And I come from a very radical kind of anarchist family from Spain. So politics has always been there. You know, we were brought up with political awareness and international socialism and stuff like that from my grandmother, and who was a political refugee from the Spanish Civil War. So that's the background, a little very politicized family of internationalists, communists, revolutionary from Spain. and then basically my trajectory took me to the spiritual life as a subversive practice. I've always practiced yoga. I'm a yoga teacher trainer, etc. And I've always done the practice as a subversive, you know, re-education, re-educating myself out of the conditionings that the culture imposes on us, you know. So that was my, it still is the way I practice and the way I teach, basically. So we arrived, the three of us, in at Greenham Common in October 85. And we stayed, 84, and we stayed there 5 months over winter until March 86. So that was a very, very strong experience for us. Mm. Very powerful.
Mm. Mm. Which gate were you staying at, or did you vary?
Greengate.
Oh, yeah.
Our daughter moved. She was 11 and a half, 12 years old, and she went to Blue Gate.
Oh!
With the youngsters and all the vegans and at the time. So she would come to, you know, we would kind of go and see her, but she decided not to be with us and she shaved her head and went to Blue Gate.
Oh, wow.
Yes. And I remember they had at Blue Gate, they had a little car, a Morris Minor, a little Morris with a wooden, you know, called Phoebe. And Phoebe was a great asset to Blue Gate because you could go on Phoebe and go around the base, you know, go around all the gates. So we sometimes hitch up rides to go and see people at Orange Gate. And, you know, we knew a few women at Orange. And of course, when at Yellow Gate, something was happening and the missiles were coming and the trucks were coming, we would join in to chuck the porridge over the, don't know if you remember that, but that was the greatest thing I've ever known in terms of a subversive gesture, and such a female one, you know. It was just wonderful. I arrived there and it was this big trucks, like with three guys at the front, loads of microphones and headgear, technology, this and that. And all it took to stop them was thick porridge. And I thought, this is such a brilliant idea, you know.
Yeah, on the windscreen so they couldn't see out, is it?
That was the best thing ever. And I remember going to Yellow Gate earlier in the afternoon, because the first time the missiles, or my first time, the first time I saw the missile, you know, the big trucks coming in with the gear, they were coming in actually, or wanted to come in. You know, there was a preparation, and they told us, the women told us, well, Yellow Gate, you know, tonight, such and such times, come early. So we were there, and all we saw was three or four women like churning this porridge in massive cauldrons, kind of big canteens, you know, over the fire going. And I thought, what are they doing? What are they making so much porridge? For how many women can, you know? And they gave us a ladle each, and I thought, what the hell is going on? And I'm pointing to trees, I go, go. Oh, okay. So I thought, oh, I'll go. I got it then, you know. Oh, yeah, you go on the tree, stay hidden, you know. And as soon as the police come and all the bay leaves and all the, just try to disperse yourselves. And, you know, I never got caught. So.
Yeah. So you never got arrested?
I never got arrested. No, I couldn't. I was a foreigner. I couldn't.
Yeah, of course. And you got a child as well.
And we had a child. There was no, and my partner didn't speak any English. You know, I was really the pillar. You know, I couldn't afford to get deported or thrown out, you know,
which
was
what
would happen to women coming from abroad, you know, even from the EU at the time, you know. You didn't want to vote if you were not a local, you know?
Yeah.
So basically, but that was such amazing things when you threw the porridge at them. And then the stupid blokes were just going like this with their windscreens. And of course,
smearing it everywhere.
So the good of all the technology, you know, it was amazing. I think that was the most kind of, you know, radical and funny act of subversive criminal act as you could think of, you know.
So you just talked about some of your favouritest memories of Greenham. I remember the gloop. I don't remember it being porridge, but it probably was porridge. Gloop, yeah. Porridge. It was porridge. What about the least favourite things?
Oh, well, you know, in the morning, waiting for the bay leaves, 7 a.m. I mean, you know, so we had to pack everything. You remember, you legally, we were able to stay on the land if we kept walking. So we had these prams. I don't know if you remember all the prams. So we'd shove all our belongings, our bedding, the whole lot in the prams and start to walk. And that was very intense, because sometimes you'd have some really nice guys, you know, a few of them were kind, say, here you go, love, you forgot the kettle, you know, pick up the kettle and put it in our, without being seen by the others, you know. So some of them were decent blokes, you know, but other were just utter fascists. They would take pleasure in finding a mug or a blanket and burning it right in front of us, you know, breaking it, putting it in the trash van, you know, how they came with the trash vans, and just shovel everything they could find, you know. So that was very violent, that confrontation. There was a violence to it, although some individuals would kind of, you know, approach the situation in a kinder way, but others were utter bastards. I mean, you know, there was no other word. They were just enjoying it. You could see that they were enjoying the destabilizing us. making us frightened. You know, it's scary to have your stuff, you know. And there were some young girls, you know, there as well, 15, 14. Our girl was 12, you know. So it was very nasty, nasty confrontations at times. And other times, smoother, kinder guys, you know, they were not, they were just doing their jobs and trying not to be too violent. But mostly it was pretty, a pretty violent encounter. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Did you have, I mean, Green Gate was sort of like the quite private gate mostly, but did you have interactions going into town? What did you feel about the local response that we had? Not from them.
Well, I mean, it wasn't that kind. I mean, we would go to the Quakers' house. They were the best people in the world, these Quakers. I'd never known about Quakers before because we don't have them in France or Spain. We have, you know, there are different organizations, but not that one. And I really, the level of generosity and kindness that I experienced at the Quakers' house was amazing. Amazing. I never, you know, I'm very grateful to them. Very grateful. Mm. Yeah. Mm. Really, really kind. Mm. And, you know, I started to do a little bit of, to offer a little bit of yoga at the Quakers' house for the women, a bit of healing. And it was lovely to have the space and to be warm, you know, to come to a warm space every few days, have a shower, you know, have a poo in a proper toilet. That was a pleasure, you know. Toilet roll.
Yeah, especially in the winter.
In the winter. That was a winter time. I mean, you know, October to March, all winter. And it snowed and it was really intense, very intense. Mm. 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 But there were amazing moments. I mean, you know, women from all over the world would come there. And I remember this woman from Colorado, an American woman. She was staying at Green Gate for a few days and then moving on. I can't remember her name. But, you know, as a young woman, I was 26, 27 at the time, and she was amazing. She said she had walked the whole of the Rocky Mountains on her own. Wow. Over months and months from America all the way to Canada, you know, like I don't know how many hundred miles, but hundreds of them. And she'd been 1.5 years, 18 months, something like that, you know. And she'd been frightened only twice because we were asking her, gosh, you know, this is scary, you know, the night and how did you manage and that. And she said it was an amazing experience. She'd been frightened only twice. Once when she met a bear and another one when she met a man. Mm. And that was very strong, you know. Mm. Very, very, a lot of learning from that interaction, you know. Women would come, I mean, there were such interesting women coming. At weekends, you'd have more kind of, you know, people coming also with their husbands, you know, to acknowledge the guys who are driving and bringing blankets and bringing food at weekends, you know, and then they would go and leave their wives there for the weekend and then come back to pick them up or whatever, you know, C&D people. And it was fantastic. I mean, some of these women, you know, from all sorts of backgrounds. It was amazing. You know, doctors, academics, you know, really, really educated people, and other people coming from, you know, nurses coming, working class people, you know, coming to help and bringing stuff, you know. I experienced a level of generosity from total strangers, and, you know, in a way that it was quite potent and very, very heartwarming. I mean, there was so much generosity. And then you had the opposite at times when everybody had gone, the weekends were over, when more women would come on the weekends, as you know. And then once Monday turned up, then, you know, more space, less people around. And then in the evening time, in the night time, then we'd have the vigilantes coming. And that was rough. That was really a couple of... Only twice in the 5 months I experienced that, you know, having to really like get my inner wolf out with all my teeth and
fangs and claws. That's a really nice description. So were you at camp during any of the bigger actions?
I don't think so. I wasn't there when, you know, it was before my time when the women made the chain around the, you know. But I participated in some actions at Yellow Gate. That's all really, but none of the big events, unfortunately. I mean, you know, I wasn't there.
Yeah.
At the time, yeah. I didn't even realize there'd been, you know, because there was such a change, a churning of women. I think at Yellow Gate it was more stable because it was more the militant women who were at the entrance, the main entrance of the base. So more militant, political activists, you know, would be more stable and you could find them regularly there, you know. While on the other gates, there were, Orange Gate had a more core group as well. I mean, I knew better Yellow Gate, which was near Green Gate. I knew everybody was there with me at my time. Blue Gate a little bit and Orange Gate. I didn't know the others. Never kind of, you know, it was everyday life was so intense, you know, finding food, recovering bedding, trying to make the benders more viable, less leaky, more warmer, finding wood for the fires. I mean, you spend your time doing the survival gestures that you needed for everyday sustenance, you know. So
and in the winter you didn't even have that much daylight to do a lot of it in.
No, because by 4 o'clock, 4:30, that was it. But luckily we had at one point we had a bunch of really strong Scottish women. I'd never seen women like that. Coming from the Mediterranean, I'd never seen women like that. I mean, they were just, you know, so strong.
and very hardy for the cold weather.
They would have this men's military coats and shaven heads, and I'd never seen people that orange. It was my experience of exotic. You know, really bright orange eyelashes and shaven heads and really butch, you know. I thought, oh my God, this is otherness to me, you know. I've never seen anything like that, you know. And they would take off their coats and they're all in their, you know, loads of bushy hair under their arms and and vests, you know, and start sewing wood like, oh, I thought, okay, I'll go on a journey and, you know, I think I can do it, but not in a vest, it's too cold.
You learn a lot of new survival skills.
I did. It was brilliant. I mean, there were some brilliant women, amazing people, you know, resourceful, resilient, with stories that were amazing, you know. In the evening we would chat and people would tell stuff. It was so amazing to be in the environment. And those of us who stayed over a period of several months, then we started to bleed together. There was all this realization of rhythm, of the female rhythm, the female body, you know, and the deep understanding of rhythm and life as a rhythm as well, with the seasons and the months and spending time together, and how we would eventually, after 2 or 3 months, start to bleed at the same time. It was amazing that. I never knew that, because you have to stay with a women-only group for a long period of time to realize that we, as a group, as females, start to have common rhythms like that. It was amazing. So there was a lot of learning, both, you know, as stories and hearing other people's stories, and also in terms of one's own body, basically, you know, resilience and awareness, you know, the awareness of the body in the collective started to become very different, and that was an amazing.
Well, I bet a lot of women there enjoyed hearing your story as well. You know,
yes, For sure. Yes, we had a few stories already.
But how you managed to even hear about Greenham was a bit of a miracle.
Yes, it was just life put us there, and this woman was there. She was amazing. And we were kind of looking for the next movement. And also our daughter Elodie was 12, and she already spoke French and Spanish. And so we wanted her to start speaking English because she was taught home. We didn't have a home, but we taught her, you know, we educated her. She didn't go to school. So coming to Britain was like, yeah, we wanted to learn English. This is it. Let's go to England. And within 3 months, she picked it up. Like, no problem.
I bet she developed a very specific vocabulary as well.
Yes. Yes. Learned it so quickly, you know, it was immediate.
Yeah, because there were other young girls around as well at that time.
Yeah, yeah. And women would come there with their children, some of them, you know.
Yeah.
And there were some really desperate cases as well of women in utter poverty coming, you know, and trying to have the support of a group, you know, and and that was also an amazing resource for a lot of women who'd have really awful stories, you know, with their kids or their kids been taken away from them for all sorts of very difficult stories.
Mm.
Women would come there and find healing and solace in the company of other women, you know.
Mm.
That was great as well. I could appreciate that, you know, how Greenham at times would be the resource for women to come to when there was no help and no support anywhere for them or anywhere for them to go, you know. Some homeless women would come there as well, you know. So yes, it had, what was very enriching is that it had so many different aspects and moments. You know, sometimes we'd get a journalist and then there would be really strong conversations going on. Political people coming, you know, activists. So you'd have another level of conversation. Then you'd have people who would really be into crystals and really a little bit you know, up here and not grounded, you know, but also with loads of knowledge, you know. I remember some witches came, you know. I've never met people who actually identified as witches. So for me, it was, oh my God, you know, this is great. So they had all sorts of rituals and things that they did, and the ancient Albium and you know, so much knowledge shared.
Yeah.
So such interesting. Every day was there was something happening every day that was enriching. Whether it was positive or negative, then it's another thing. But there were some really strong encounters.
Mm. And also, so would you say that it had changed your life, apart from the fact that you came and lived in a different country? But what's your like memories of how it affected you, your life, that have continued with you to this day?
Well, changed my life, yes, in many ways, because I'd never at that point experienced a collective of women like that over a period of 5 months. I'd never been in a women-only environment, outdoors, in the wild, pretty much. You know, and in a political, making a political statement and action, you know, so that was a very strong thing. And it really gave me the space as well to be a lesbian and to be free with that, which in my country was much more complex, you know, coming from the south of France, much more machist culture, Mediterranean machist cultures, was much more difficult to be out. So I left there when I was 17 anyway. But, you know, yes, to come to a place where that wasn't a problem and it was all out and about. There were loads of lesbians at Greenham Common and nobody but an eyelid about it. It was just the way it was. So that was very settling, you know, that gave a lot, that pacified an aspect of the identity which wasn't at that time pacified, you know. So that gave permission.
Yeah. So that was a big personal,
yes,
personal development, personal growth. I mean, I those conversations at night were actually consciousness raising for just about all of us, I think.
Yeah, absolutely.
And to hear each other's stories.
Yeah, that was very powerful.
Yeah. One of the reasons that this project has got going is because there was a sort of realization that so few, even political activists and historians, were aware of Greenham. I mean, you might not be aware, but, you know, we were on the common for like over 16 years.
Yes, I know.
And I wonder if you'd like to say anything about like the impact that Greenham has had historically and politically, and about the project now, trying to get the word out again.
You know, for me, when I heard about this project, you know, actually a few years back, about maybe 8 years ago, before I came to live in Wales, maybe even, I've been here 10, 11 years now. So just before that, a friend of ours, my partner is a filmmaker, and a friend of ours, a filmmaker, she made a film about Greenham, an experimental film about Greenham Common. And I told some stories while we went to Greenham, and she kind of filmed me there telling some stories. So there was already then a desire. And I thought, you know, when I saw the base all abandoned, and it was really, I felt quite emotional. It was really weird. And I thought, wow, once upon a time when I was here last, there was life going on here. It was buzzing with ideas, with aliveness, with vitality, with you know, activism. I don't know. There was a very strong, passionate movement there. And to see it all derelict like this and all gone was very, I thought, so where are the stories? Who is telling the story of this, you know? And I couldn't find anything. I couldn't find any records. Wow. You know, I looked for some of the women that I knew a little, you know. I couldn't find anybody. I couldn't find anything, any records of this amazing thing that happened there over such a long period of time. And I thought, I hope someone is going to do something. And then when I kind of received this information about your project, I thought, oh, great. Finally, this is going to come out in the light. Because I think there was such a, like everything female anyway, such a hushing of it. Just a few crazy women around the base, you know. And there was such a lid put on Greenham. And, you know. And then parallel to that, sometimes when I spoke to younger women, you know, and I'd say, oh, yeah, I was at Greenham. And they would go, oh, my God, you were at Greenham. Yeah, my mom was there. Or, you know, oh, my God, you know, there's such a, oh, tell us about it. Such a excitement and a desire, a really strong desire to know more, to understand what was it, how was it, who did you meet, what did you do with your days, how did it happen, you know, such curiosity and desire to get more, you know. And there was nowhere to be found, you know. So I couldn't find any information. So I'm very pleased, and it's about time that, you know, all these years after, that Green takes its place in history as a radical and quite unique movement of a subversive movement, a political subversive movement, women taking over, you know, a space. I mean, it's unique in its form. It's really unique, and you know, and it should be in all books on sociology and history of this country.
Definitely. Yeah,
and feminism, of course, you know.
Yeah. We were definitely erased.
yes, there was, that was my feeling. There was an erased Greenham.
Yeah. Did you do banner making and songs? Did you get involved with the, like, you were doing the spiritual side, and there was a lot of creativity going on?
Yes, that's right. Yeah. Yeah, just, you know, I don't remember any striking moments doing banner making, or, you know, I usually wouldn't quite engage in that, you know. It wasn't my place somehow. Yeah.
We all had our
our
inclinations.
Yes.
So you did go. You've been back to the common since the military left, and the fence was down. Was it down?
Some of the fence was still up. Yeah, it wasn't completely down. There was some of the fence, you know. I can't remember, because I couldn't quite recognize the landscape, you know, without everything. So I couldn't quite recognize at which gate we were when me and Lucy went there to do the filming. I couldn't discern whether we were at Yellow or another gate. I would have recognized Green Gate, because I remember the kind of going in a little and sliding upwards towards the Green Gate. Yellow Gate was much more frontal and open. So, yeah, but some of the fence was still up then.
Yeah,
it wasn't completely down.
Some bits have remained some bits have remained as like historical artifacts or something, you know, they've been protected. But it was incredibly hard, wasn't it, in the freezing winter,
with
the evictions and the wet wood. And eventually I bought a truck so that I could be at Greenham more full time. 1986 I got a truck. But yeah, so you ended up staying in Britain then?
Yep, that was it.
Oh, great. Well,
thank you. I hope it was worth, you know.
Oh, absolutely, because you've added a whole personal story that is a unique story, and that's the thing. It's endless doing these archive interviews. It's endless. It just, there's, you know, there just keeps on being more. It's honestly, go on the website and you'll sit down into the oral history arc, the history bit, and you'll be able to listen to load of old mates probably.
Okay, well, that's really great. Thanks very much.